On this episode of the Autumn Windbags, we look at Dave Ziegler's moves, or should we say no moves, as the trade deadline came to an end. How long will Derek Carr last in Las Vegas? How long will Josh McDaniels last in Las Vegas? And we love, we subscribe, rate, and comment on whatever platform you're listening on. All right, here we go.
I got a dream of winning a Super Bowl. I got a dream of being in a Pro Bowl. I'm really not into dreams anymore, okay? I'm into nightmares.
There it is!
Caught! Touchdown! Raiders!
You're listening to the Autumn Windbags, an audio attack from the Silver and Black. Here are your windbags, RJ Clifford and Juan Soto. Yeah, it is another episode of the Autumn Windbags. RJ Clifford, Juan Soto, let's have some fun today. This is my second show with the beard, Soto. You haven't made one comment about it. Is it because it's so mesmerizing it's leaving you speechless?
I thought it was just some shadowing. You're using some new lighting or something.
My full robust beard.
I mean,
he hates it. Absolutely hates it. But I'm giving it a whirl. It's more red than I thought. The big thing is, like, I thought, okay, I'm not having any gray hairs, right? Pushing 40, no gray hairs. I'm like, well,
on your beard, you will.
Is it just disappearing faster than I could turn gray? Right? Is that what's happening?
Hey, my beard is a little bit longer than I normally keep it, and it's a lot of gray. When I was younger, I had a lot of red in my beard. Now, all that red hair is going to turn white. Trust me.
It hasn't. Hey, so far, so good.
It's going to.
Not a smidge. Not a smidge. It's probably all that clean living.
How many natural old redheads do you see? They got a lot of white in those hairs, man. A lot of white.
Hey, one of them ain't me. It's all that clean living. Yeah, I keep it to 7 whiskeys a day because my body's a temple. Yeah. First question of the day. After coming off of shellacking like we did, let's keep it light and fun, right? This is a fun show. The greatest radio advice I ever got in my 13 years of doing radio is always keep it fun. That's what we're going to do. What is the best fast food burger? The best fast food burger. Now, I feel like this gets very regional, right?
And
you'll know exactly where I'm from when I say mine. Do you want to go first or second?
I'll let you go first.
I'm going to go, standard issue Cali boy.
Yeah.
I'm going In-N-Out, and I will for good reason. So when I was a kid, I hated In-N-Out because it's just so simple. Like, I wanted, like, chicken nuggets. I wanted a Happy Meal. I wanted, you want, like, a diversified portfolio. But there's something to a place that's just like, we're just going to make one thing, basically one thing, and we're going to do it immaculately. And we're going to do it really, really well.
It's going to taste the same way every time you get there.
Every single time, no matter where you are. We're doing In-N-Out. And it used to be really exclusive, right? It was only like Vegas and California. That was it. Now it's spread and it's in like Missouri and Utah. It's spread all over the place. But it's very Californian because it's all fresh ingredients that you get in California, right? Like the Central Valley of California can grow enough food to feed the entire country, right? We're so spoiled by the access to fresh food that we have. Fresh tomatoes, fresh lettuce, fresh air. The fucking French fries are fresh. They literally...
They're potatoes.
They literally julienne the potato
into the oil
10 minutes before you eat it. That's how fresh those French fries are. Every other French fry you've eaten in your entire life was made in a factory in Iowa, sat in a warehouse for a month frozen, then went into a fryer at your McDonald's, and then you ate it. The only reason they taste good is because they've injected that shit with like poison and all this stuff to make it taste good. In-N-Out French fries are the only French fries that won't kill you. In-N-Out Burger, best burger in the world.
I do like In-N-Out burgers. What's your go-to? How do you order it? Because that's kind of like the thing, like to kind of make you elite, is how you order your.
It shows In-N-Out. Off how local you are.
All
the verbiage. I just do grilled onions, like a regular, like everything on it, grilled onions, standard issue.
Yeah, I do. I do no onions, but I add chopped banana peppers, chopped grilled banana peppers with mustard on it. They just kind of like make a little paste out of it. It's just delicious.
I'm sure they're like, God damn it, what a pain in the ass. We gotta bust out the banana peppers and we gotta grill it up. We gotta grill Soto again. Soto.
I know, right? In-N-Out's good. It's one of my top ones.
The problem is there's always a line. No matter what, it could be 10:01 a.m. And it could be one of those places where there's an In-N-Out and another In-N-Out a block away. Line's still out the door.
Still lines.
Worst part of In-N-Out.
Yeah, I mean, In-N-Out's good. You can't beat a Big Mac, it's like Old Faithful, but honestly, I like a lot of buns though. You know me, I like a lot of buns.
Not big enough. You want three of them?
Yeah, right.
It's like the chick from Total Recall, but for butts.
Three tits, yeah. mine because of the way you can order it, mine has to be Five Guys, because oh. I do love the grilled jalapenos and the A1 sauce and the Cajun fries, which are just like the ones at In-N-Out. They're potatoes. They cut them right there and they fry them. Also fresh ingredients.
I didn't know how rich you were. You go in Five Guys.
I don't go often. I don't go out meet. I don't eat out very often. But if I'm craving a burger, like if I'm in line or whatever, like you know, my chick likes In-N-Out, we'll go whatever. But if we want to like go to, you know, have a little bit of time, we'll go to Five Guys, because
that's why Carl's Jr. plummets on my power rankings, because it's the most expensive one.
It's fucking expensive as hell, man. But I do like those Oreo shakes, man. Those Oreo shakes are top notch.
That's why shout out to the Wendy's value meal, dude.
Frosty.
The 99 cents for Frosty, 99 cents for fries, 99 cents for chili, 99 cents baked potato. That's a four course meal for under $4. Like, you can be like, hey, Colton Miller, you have $7 to buy enough food to be full. He's like, I'm going to Wendy's. You can fill Colton Miller's ass up with $7 at Wendy's.
Wendy's nuts were in your mouth. No, like if I don't remember what Wendy's fries taste like, because I always just get the baked potato.
Yeah.
It's like, I don't know. It feels like I'm like kind of like high class.
You pour the chili on the baked, you order the chili and pour it on the baked potato.
I can't do that. Oh. Not have a burger.
Oh, it's too perfect.
Oh God.
That's a meal right there. If you're just kind of, you know,
I don't know if you knew this, but I have a little bit of a weight problem.
I used to eat bear claws two at a time.
Your claws are right from here.
What movie is that from? Put it in the comment section.
Put it in the comments below.
All right. What is the best fast food burger? That's the question of the day. Leave it down in the comments. Very
no fighting, please. God damn.
No. Bust out the brass knuckles. This is something you really got to be serious about.
RJ, when you tell them not to do something, they'll do it.
Whatever you do, do not pull it. Do not fashion a shiv out of a toothbrush in prison and stab your fellow Raider fan in the eye because you think that Whoppers are terrible. That's all I ask. So the tread day, dread. Yeah. Let's rewind. The trade deadline came and went. It was November 1st. We're recording this Wednesday night, November 2nd. And here's a list of all the giant trades that the Raiders did this season. There you go. There's all the trades that the Raiders did this offseason. The Jonathan Hankins was the tiny baby trade. We got a 6th-round pick for our best run stopper on the defensive line. That's it. That's all the moves that the Raiders did. So Ziegler talked about it at a press conference today. We'll get to that in a second. I have a list of all the trades that were made in the last few days. We'll get to that in a second. But what this told me doing nothing is, if they had completely given up on the season, there'd be a fire sale, right? We'd be like, all right, let's start ditching these expensive contracts. Let's start moving on. Let's start planning for next season. That didn't happen. If they felt that they could save this season, but they have to go for broke, they would have went the other way. Let's start trading draft picks for some, let's get desperate and get a right tackle. Let's get a linebacker, right? They'd get desperate and start reaching and overpaying because we wanted someone right now, right? They didn't either. So that tells me that this organization, Ziegler, McDaniels, they're still like sticking to their game plan, right? Whether we're 2-5, whether we're 5-2 or 0-7 and 7-0, they're like, no, this is still our plan. We are still sticking to it despite incredibly disappointing first 8 weeks of the season. Soto, is that what you saw? And do you agree?
That is what I saw, and I do agree. I don't know that there was any one player out there available that would have been worth what it would have taken to get him. Not just short term, but long term as well, because you still have to end up paying him. And the way our roster is built right now, it would be very difficult to do that. And we're not one Roquan Smith away from making this defense much better. I know we have a little bit of a difference of opinion in how to build a defense like that. And, you know, there's you know, I'm of the opinion there's three ways to do things, right? Fast, cheap, and good. And you pick two out of three. Mm-hmm. And if you want to,
are you describing all my ex-girlfriends right now?
Yes. If you want to do it fast, and good, it's not going to be cheap. You know, if you want to do it good and cheap, it's not going to be fast, right? If you do it fast and cheap, it's not going to be good, you know? So I think where we got in trouble with our roster the way it is now, where it has so many holes, is Gruden was building this team as the general manager. He was building it as a head coach, where head coaches look 1-2 years down the line, whereas general managers look maybe 4-5 years down the line. Mm-hmm. And that's why we're in the position we're in right now. Gruden has a track record. I've called him a firework. He has a track record. Look what happened to our Super Bowl team. He leaves to go to Tampa. He leaves his team behind. They go to the Super Bowl that year. The next year, they don't make the playoffs. They don't make the playoffs for another 10 years. Right? Now, what happened in Tampa? He wins the Super Bowl, and then he misses the playoffs, goes to the playoffs, misses the playoffs, you know, and then it goes steadily downhill. He's a firework, right? Same thing with us. We went to the, you know, we took his team to the playoffs, but then when someone else takes over, doesn't run his exact scheme, you see the glaring holes in the roster.
Yeah.
And, you know, if you're selling Zeke as you're selling yourself Ziegler and McDaniels as a kind of a package deal, it's not going to be a firework type thing. And I think that's what Mark Davis signed up for. Like, hey, do this the right way. You know, I like your plan. Let's see it out. We can't just shift a couple games into the season because, you know, we did have some injuries, right? We did have some players that we were counting on that maybe haven't fulfilled their expectations. Chandler Jones, you know, so let's just play it out.
I also wonder if Dave Ziegler is a little gun shy after how free agency went.
I think he is for sure. That Chandler Jones, I wouldn't want to look. Yeah. If you're going to spend that money, you would want to spend the money on a Roquan Smith, a guy on the ascending still, right? A young guy, big first big contract. I don't know that we're going to get those big players anymore that are on the downside, on the back nine of their career. I don't think we're going to do that anymore because it's going to be that long game. You know, build that roster, build that depth, fill those holes.
So, like, you look at Ziegler's moves recently, and it's been the good one, I think. I'm still supportive of the Devontae Adams move. Let's get the best receiver in football. He wanted to play with Derek Carr. He wanted to be here.
I mean, he wanted to play with the Raiders. Derek Carr just happened to be here.
I think it's more Carr than him being on the Raiders. I mean,
he wasn't wearing a Carr jersey when he was 10 years old. He was wearing a Raiders jersey.
Oh, no, he wasn't wearing Carr's fucking 8-year-old Pop Warner jersey?
Exactly. He's a Raiders fan. Exactly. What do you want to tell you?
Okay. I think you want a car more than anything, but whatever. We can move on. Obviously, Carr
ain't going to be here next year, bro. I'm going to tell you that right now.
Huh?
Carr's not going to be here next year.
Want to bet?
Sure. What do you want to bet?
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. He'll be here next year.
Okay, so here's the deal. Here's my take on that, and I'll tell you why.
Okay.
I don't believe he's going to be here next year because the way his contract is set up, right now, as of this moment, his last years of his contract, those last 3 years, the void years, those are not guaranteed, right? Mm-hmm. But when the new league year starts in 2023, if he's still on the roster that day, then those years become fully guaranteed. Those are guaranteed years now. Now, not all the money is fully guaranteed, but those are guaranteed years. I don't know with the season that Carr has had up till now, if I'm Josh McDaniels and I'm Dave Ziegler, I'm going to hitch my career as a Raider on a 10th year quarterback that didn't show you that much when you were starting that first year. And I think they would want to maybe reset their clock and start with the younger quarterback and fill gaps with that money. Because honestly, the way he's playing right now, I don't know that he's worth $35, $40 million, which is what he's going to get paid those last 3 years, $35, $40, and 40 something.
Well, one, I don't think they think Carr's been playing as terrible as you do. I don't think anyone thinks Carr plays as terrible as you do. But two, I think they'd much rather stick with someone they have than to risk being in quarterback purgatory. Nothing kills coaches' jobs faster than not having a quarterback.
And Derek Carr. And being Derek Carr. Nothing kills head coaches faster than being Derek Carr. He's got seven of them. And
come on. Gruden wasn't his fault, right?
Gruden wasn't his fault. No, it wasn't. Right? I'm not trying to come down on Derek Carr. What I'm saying is you have to take a look at this objectively, right? And objectively, Derek Carr is not playing very good, okay? He had two meltdown games this year already. In year nine, he had two meltdown games. And
four good games.
Okay, no, he had four okay games.
He had four, they were good.
No, dude, look, your
no turnovers, 250 yards, couple touchdowns.
Yeah, that's game manager type.
Good.
That's game manager type games. He's not throwing for 300 plus yards. He's not throwing for three touchdowns. He's not doing that. When you needed the quarterback to kickstart your offense because your running game wasn't working, he couldn't do it. He failed miserably. Okay. And that's the game manager part. And you don't pay a game manager that much money.
He's proven 100 times he's more than a game manager.
That is in the past, sir. What we're looking at right now. Still who he is. Okay, that's who he was. Who he is who he's showing us right now.
If he's worse now than he was, whose fault is that?
Look, if I'm Josh McDaniels,
if he's worse now than he was,
I'm not blaming it on myself.
So you think he's going to use Carr as a scapegoat? That he'll get rid of Carr and say that's the reason we failed?
No. I'm not saying he's going to use him as a scapegoat. I'm saying he's going to look at what he has now and how he's playing with me. This is the system that I run, and I'm going to tweak it, and I'm going to make it so he can be able to be his best. Because honestly, right now, every single week up until I think maybe week four, Carr has been given less and less responsibility in this game plan. Because the first game, wide open, you can check, you can change plays, you can do this, you can throw the ball, whatever it is, and that, and he melted down. Three picks, terrible game for him. We had this game where our running game wasn't able to pace us on offensively, and he melted down. So if I'm Josh McDaniels, I don't feel comfortable giving that big of a chunk of my salary cap to a quarterback that hasn't shown he's that elite level talent to be able to warrant that. When I have so many other holes, it's not about him as a player. I'm not saying he's not good. I'm saying is the deficiencies that he has compound each other, and it's a terrible mix. Okay.
Well, it's a bad mix. If I'm Josh McDaniels, the only reason I get rid of him was to scapegoat him. Because if he's playing worse now than he has in his entire career, then that's on McDaniels more than anybody. If Devontae Adams is playing worse than he has in his career, or at least recently, right? Because he wasn't good when he first started, but since he became Devontae Adams, if he's playing worse then, that's on McDaniels. Same with Hunter, right? So it's like, I can see him trying to scapegoat somebody. I can't see him going into. So maybe you're right. Maybe you're right. Maybe Carr isn't next season because I can't see him wanting to be in quarterback purgatory.
You keep saying quarterback purgatory. What does that mean?
It means you don't have a quarterback.
We're in quarterback purgatory now.
No, we're not. He's a 10. You said yourself, he's a 10 to 14 quarterback. And you think he's a good game manager.
He's not playing he's not playing like a 10 to 14 quarterback.
Okay, for three games.
You look up his stats. They're not good, man. He's not playing great. We've been where we've been as far as scoring wise because of our running game. That's what's been pacing us. And you don't pay a quarterback that much money if he's not he's not running and the cause of your offense. Right now, we're doing well offensively because of our running game.
And if he's playing worse now than he has in a long, long time, that's on McDaniels, and he either realizes that and wants him to scapegoat, or he says, shit, am I going to be able to get someone better than Carr this quick with my job on the line?
So look.
That's what muddles it up.
So yeah, you know, this is what muddles it up when it comes to having a game plan and a system like Josh McDaniels' system, okay? It's not like choice route here, choice route there. It's different than that, okay? It's a little... And I think John Gruden was, like you said before, he was the perfect coach for Derek Carr. He built an offense around what Derek Carr can do and what he can't do. And we've seen it work.
No, I think Carr adjusted to Gruden. We said it before. Gruden's like, this is my system, and you will abide by my system. And Carr's the ultimate soldier. So he's like, yes, sir, whatever you want. I'll throw left-handed. That's what you desire, right?
Yes.
That's
Carr. But here's the problem, though. Carr, he's, I mean, pre-snap, I'll give you that. Carr is, and I've said it before, I don't mind saying it. Carr is amazing pre-snap. He does an excellent job helping his offensive line. He can see blitzes coming. He calls the shit out all the time. And he knows what he's doing pre-snap. And a lot of that was John Gruden help, his help, but he has retained that knowledge and that power to do so. He's got a strong arm. He can make all the throws, all right? He's accurate with the ball. And he's an excellent leader, okay? The issues you run into is the issues that he has, they compound off of each other and they become bigger issues. So post-snap, he's not great. He gets fooled a lot post-snap, and I saw a lot of game film in this last game. And on top of not being very good post-snap, he also doesn't have very good pocket awareness. So when you're not good post-snap, you tend to hold the ball a little bit longer than you should. And without that pocket awareness, that becomes an issue. Now, on top of that, he's not the most mobile guy. I'm not saying he's a statue out there, but he's not a guy that's going to attack you with his legs and make you kind of play him honestly for the run. All right. And he fumbles a lot. He turns the ball over. So those things, they compound each other. Is he extremely accurate? Is he one of those pinpoint accurate guys? No. Does he have crazy arm talent where he can like maybe throw a ball late and have it still get there in time? No, he has a strong arm, but not one of those elite level arms. So you put all that together, and there's a lot of issues going on that maybe we didn't see before, but it's coming up now.
Well, he's improved his pocket awareness exponentially in the last like 2-3 seasons. So I would say below average pocket awareness before. Now I'd say he's average or better pocket awareness. He moves in the he's moved in the pocket and saved a lot of sacks this season. He does still hold on to the ball. He doesn't do it every time. That's the thing.
No, but what I'm saying is look, I hate cutting you off. I'm sorry. But is you're looking for things where he's improved. But what I'm saying is every time one happens, there's another one right there that actually attaches to that one that makes it worse, that makes that issue worse. So, yeah, I didn't see that pre-snap. This is post-snap. And I got to hold it a little bit longer. And my walking awareness isn't great.
Back to your original take that McDaniels wants to move on from Carr. If his system's this complicated where even Derek Carr, very, very smart, 10-year veteran, is struggling to figure it out, do you think he's going to want to start over with a rookie or a guy from scratch? I don't think so. That's the other part of it, too. His job on the line. If the Raiders go, you know, God forbid, like 5-12, right? Okay. His job's on the line next season. He's like, all right, starting over. Brand new guy. I'm like,
look, if he sees Derek Carr as not being able to run his system, why would you stay with him? That's what I'm talking about right now. Mac Jones, for all his deficiencies, he had like the fourth scoring offense last year. They dummied it down a lot and they did certain things, but he was able to make a lot of the reads that Carr is not able to make. He's just not making them. I'm not saying he's not able to, but he's just not making them. And you're telling me that the weapons that Mac Jones had last year are better than the weapons Carr has this year? It's not true, man. So if you're not doing what you need to do as that veteran quarterback and you're paying him that much money and you owe him that much, and it's not just 1 year, RJ, it's 3 years of exponentially growing contract, 35, 40, 40, I think three or something like that. It's a lot of money to give somebody that you're not 100% with that's been running your offense the way you want to run it. He's had to dial it way back since week one.
If you're Josh McDaniels and you're saying, all right, this guy's 10-year veteran and he's taken him a while to learn this system, I'm going to give him time to do it. Like, we got to remember, McDaniels had his pick of the litter of coaching jobs. Every single coaching vacancy he could have had. I think we can agree. Like, every single coaching vacancy, I think pretty much. That's why it's hard for me to come down too hard on getting rid of Bisaccia and getting McDaniels, because I think just about every owner probably would have got McDaniels more or less.
He must have interviewed for almost every single job.
Yeah, at least interviewed.
Because everyone wanted to talk to him.
I think it's safe to say that McDaniels chose Las Vegas, right? Chose Derek Carr.
I agree with that.
He's thinking, okay, this is the guy that can do my system, right? And it's taken a while for it to work. I think he'd rather be like, all right, I've got Carr a year into this system learning it. So the learning curve next season should already be right there, right? I'm already a year into this guy. And they built a 3-year window, right? The way they structured all these contracts, it's a 3-year window. I think he'd rather do that than completely start over
Why
from scratch with somebody else and risk quarterback purgatory?
But he's also shown you that he's wildly inconsistent, and he has these games multiple times per year. The last 4 years, he's had multiple games like he had against New Orleans. There's been multiple games every single year where that's happened, and you can blame.
And every single year, he's had games like he did against Dallas and okay. like last season. Like he's done other amazing games too.
These wild swings, dude, they just can't happen. You can't win consistently with those wild swings like that. You can't have that. And I understand he's had some highs. He's had some highs. Okay, yeah, we won last season, but again, take a look at those last four games. How did he play? He didn't play. It wasn't because of his play that we won those last four games last year.
That's how we won our first four games, was how he played.
Exactly. But and where were we before we won those last four? We were under 500. That's where we are with Derek Carr playing. I'm telling you, I mean, I don't want to make it all about Carr. But what I'm saying is I don't know that if I'm Josh McDaniels and if I'm Dave Ziegler, I'm going to put my job on the line for a quarterback who's shown me that even in year nine, he's this slow picking up our offense, and guarantee him $120 million the next 3 years.
I think they would over quarterback purgatory.
You keep saying quararterback purgatory, RG. Who's to say it's quarterback purgatory? If you go up and get the guy,
it's going to happen unless there's a quarterback available.
There is quarterbacks available. There's a lot of quarterbacks available in the draft next year.
You think McDaniels wants to risk starting over with a rookie?
Okay, well, here's the deal.
Job on the line.
You can call it risking that or going for something better. But if you see what you have now and you see that it's not good enough, why not go for something better?
First off, your premise, I don't think Ziegler looks at Carr and says it's not good enough. I don't think so.
His play right now hasn't been good enough. Ziegler said it himself.
Neither is Devontae's, neither is Hunter's, neither as
we're not talking about them. We're talking, don't pull the distraction. We're talking about Derek Carr and his contract. His contract is set up in a certain way to where they're either all in or they're all out. And I'm telling you, his play right now, because of the contract,
they're in for two more years. Guaranteed.
Three more years. No,
I think it's three total.
This one he already had. It's three more.
It was an extension, not a re-sign. You're right.
After this season, look, right now, those 3 years are non-guaranteed. When the league year starts in 2023 in March, all three become guaranteed when that starts, RG. That's $35 million, $40 million, and 40-something and change. Dude, that's $120 million for a quarterback that hasn't run your system, and he's in his ninth season. That hasn't been able to run your system that a rookie quarterback ran the season before with less weapons to better results. I think you want to keep him, but I don't know that they're going to want to hitch their wagon onto somebody that with the experience hasn't been able to, and Ziegler said it, execute the game plan. That was his big thing is, you know, I'm very happy with, we'll get to that in a second. But his big thing was, we haven't been able to execute the game plan. Well, whose job is it to execute the game plan? It's the quarterback's job to execute the game plan.
Well, 53 players, but I get what you're saying.
No, the main player, you know, he's the main guy. He's the one that, he's the straw that stirs the drink. So what
Ziegler said that because there's three things that make you win and lose football games, right? Personnel, game plan, execution, basically, right? Who's out there? How well do they play? And who's
how well they coaching,
yeah. Right? If he would have said, so he doesn't want to blame the personnel because that reflects on him. That's him saying, I didn't put out a good team. So he's not going to say, well, we didn't put out the right guys because that makes him look bad. He's not going to say they're poorly coached because that's going to make his buddy Josh McDaniels look bad. So the only thing left is these guys got to execute. I mean, we're putting out a monster squad. We are coaching them brilliantly.
No, we don't have to say that. We're saying we're doing the best we can with what we have right now. We're always looking to get better. Okay, that's what he said. We're always looking to get better at every position. That's code word for we've been given a roster with a lot of holes, and we're trying to freaking fill them as best we can. Because that's what happened. He's been given a roster with a lot of holes.
They didn't do shit.
Bro,
and the shit they did,
good,
most of it was bad.
Fast and Jammer cheap. Jones. Good, fast, and cheap. If you want to build a good roster and you want to build it cheap because you have all these contracts that are given to other people, it's not going to be fast.
They've had since January.
Dude, I'm talking a couple of years, man, to build, to fill these gaps and make this a more balanced team. It's going to take some time, man.
Well, let's go back to what started this. Ziegler and free agency. We didn't do shit leading up to the trade deadline. I'm wondering if Ziegler's gun shy because of the mistakes that he's made so far, or appear to be mistakes so far, right? Extending Waller when you didn't have, neither one of us wanted to extend Waller.
The Renfro contract is, dude, look.
Chandler Jones, that's obviously hurting bad. I still think Hunter is just underutilized. We'll disagree on Hunter. I know you like Hunter more than I do.
Oh, yeah, I don't like the Hunter contract. I never liked the Hunter contract. Okay, Davante Adams is your best wide receiver, right? He's your best deep threat. He's your best over-the-middle threat. He's your best slot receiver. He's your best receiver anywhere you want to put him. Mm-hmm. You don't pay somebody that much money, $15 million a year, basically, to be the second best at everything he does. You get guys like Mac Hollins to fill a role because you already have the main guy, because he can make other guys.
We'll disagree on Hunter. We'll disagree on Hunter. I thought you could do Davante and Hunter and not Waller. You could do Davante and Waller and not, right? Like, I feel like
you can get a nice linebacker and a nice defensive tackle for that $15 million, my man.
Or you just hit on Chandler Jones and then so much of this problem's gone, right? Like, that's my point. Is all right. So yeah, so like, even you hate the Hunter Renfro contract, right? So according to you, that's four atrocious contracts, five if you count Carr, and one good one with Davante. All his big moves. The only one that most people think was okay, Davante Adams is worth the money and the draft capital. Doesn't sound like you like the Carr one. You don't like the Hunter one. Neither one of us thought the Waller extension made sense, and everyone hates the Chandler Jones move. So all his big splash moves basically have blown up in his face.
I don't have a problem with the Carr contract because we can get out of it.
So four of his six big moves you don't like.
I feel we wanted to play a different way. I think Josh McDaniels wanted to play a different way, and he saw how it was handled week one, and he knew we couldn't play that way. Because week two, week three, week four, he dialed it back every single week until we found the mixture.
It took him four games to do what we said after game two. Run the ball, open up play action, limit errors in the passing game. And I think this whole like, oh, Josh McDaniels, he's like, he's so flexible. It's like, I don't think he is. Like, he's not showing it with the Raiders.
In week three, that was a tough week, and you were there, because fucking Tennessee scored touchdown the first three drives. You were put behind. You couldn't run the ball like you wanted to. So that was, again, you put the ball in the quarterback's hands and tell him, hey, come get us back into the game, and we came up short. We were able to get the ball first and run. It was a lot better.
Let's get back to Ziegler. Ziegler did a press conference today. It's Wednesday. We're recording this Wednesday evening, Wednesday morning. And his comments got Raiders Twitter really hot and bothered. He talked for about a half hour. I watched the whole thing. There's about 20 seconds talking about how he feels about the roster.
We feel good about the team that we have here, and we feel good about the guys that we have here. We need to execute better, you know? And so, again, we looked at some things to help improve the team, I'd say, in different ways. And again, those didn't materialize. But at the same time, we're excited about the group that we have. We're excited to continue to learn about the group that we have. And again, identify people and players that, you know, we can continue to build with.
So my two takeaways were, how can you look at this defensive roster and feel good about it is the first one. You can't possibly feel good about it. Two, the execute thing that you brought up. And like I said earlier, he's not going to blame the coach. He's not going to blame himself. So he's saying our guys need to execute. No, he's not wrong, right? Especially after New Orleans, nobody executed. So it's like, he's not wrong in that statement. Like, these guys are, you know, almost everyone's playing beneath themselves, like not as good as they have in the past, below average. From Davante Adams to our worst backup right tackle, right? Everyone's playing terrible. But this was pure damage control. Like, everything he's saying is damage control. Fans got mad at his words. You need to be mad at his actions. That's what people should be mad about. Of course he's going to say, like, I feel good about it, right? It's damage control. That's what you do in press conferences. You're not there for them. You're there for yourself, right? You want to put out the narrative that makes you and your team look the best. Don't be mad at Dave Ziegler's words. Be mad at the Chandler Jones contract. Be mad at the Darren Waller contract. Be mad at this defensive squad that never got touched. Be mad at the right side of our line that they didn't address. Like, be mad at the actions. It's the words that I think that, like, the words like reignited people's hate. Mm-hmm. Don't let that, like, keep your eye on the ball. Like, it's his actions that we should be, is non-actions, if anything, that we should be mad at.
Well, there's that. But also, you have to take a look at our losses have been, before New Orleans, have been close losses. And the difference between the wins and the losses did come down to execution in a lot of those cases. You know, three interceptions the first game, not great. Second game, just didn't move the ball one bit in the second half. And
you had to tackle that little tiny quarterback one time to win the game. One time.
Okay. We also could have done something offensively in the second half. We had 40 yards offensively in the second half. Also, we fumbled in overtime. That's execution. Okay. Our third game, drop passes, drop touchdowns, a poorly
down
thrown,
three scores out of the gate to the fucking Titans.
Yeah, down three scores. We were able to claw back. You know, the ball was in our quarterback's hands. You know, he's been shown to lead drives, game-winning drives when he can, when you need field goals, but when he need to put the ball in the end zone, he hasn't been as great.
Like I said, execution, he's not execution. Wrong. He's not wrong about execution. Look, he's
as, very bad right as, about you execution. Want, as bad as you want to talk about this roster, we were in those games to win, and the execution is the reason we lost.
And because the roster wasn't great, we were and in because those of games. Play calling.
We weren't getting blown out every single like, you can blame the roster being bad. If we're getting blown out every week, we're like, dude, we're not even fucking close to these guys. But we're in games every week, and there's one or two plays per week that aren't being made that need to be made. And
you've,
like
always, you've always said players make wins and losses. That's always been your line. Players. We need players. It's the players that play the game. It's the players that win the game. And now you're saying, no, it's execution when I'm saying the roster's trash?
Well, the players execute. The players execute. The freaking coach doesn't execute the play. The players have to execute the play.
Good players execute good plays. Like you've always said in 2 years of this podcast, you said players, 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 players. And now you're saying, no, just use the guy you do have and execute. Like you're right. They didn't execute. I'm with you. But don't let that also overshadow the other three errors that this is a roster that our dumb asses saw a mile away with gaping holes that they chose not to address. That's Ziegler's job.
You're making it seem like we're getting blown out every single week and don't have a chance. We have chances, and it's stupid plays at ends of games that are costing us most of these games.
Okay, but if it's Carr on that presser and he says execution, then yes, like he's pointing at himself, the thing he can control, right? If it's Josh McDaniels on that presser and he's saying, I got to call plays better, I need to work harder, I need to work the guys that I have better, he's pointing the finger at himself and he's saying what he's supposed to. When it's Ziegler, who's only, he can't execute, he's not on the field, he can't design, he's not doing plays, he's not the coach, it's just personnel, that's the one thing he needs to worry about, that is one of the things that's a major issue with this team, and he doesn't address it, he's the only one not pointing the finger at himself. McDaniels does, players do, Ziegler is not.
Okay, so what do you say then? You're Ziegler, what do you say to that?
You say exactly what he said, but we're supposed to see through it. You say, you point the finger elsewhere. But let me tell you, and I need to see through that.
Let me tell you another reason why you don't say it. When you say, you know what, I need to do a better job getting us some more talent on this roster. Every player in that freaking locker room is like, he thinks we're fucking shit. You're going to want to play for that? No, you're going to want to tell them what the coach is telling them. Look, here, look at this play. Boom, you did this. You did that. This is where we messed up. Look, guys, if we execute, we can win these games. Look at this play. Boom.
That's two good reasons. We agree.
That's coaching.
He's saying what he's supposed to.
And that's execution.
He's saying what he's supposed to, but it's not truth. It's damage control, keeping morale high for the reasons you said. I'm agreeing with you.
I think it is truth. I think it is truth that execution has been the out of the big three, execution has been the bad one because we've been in these games except for this last one. And I'm not going to discount the whole illness thing because guess what? Devonta Adams still isn't full pop in practice yet. So I think a lot of people were sick still for that last game. I'm not saying that's a hold all of it. I'm not saying that at all. What I am saying is that the execution was the issue when we in those close game losses was the execution.
I'm not giving Ziegler the out that you are. He did not build this roster to the extent of his ability. He poorly constructed a playoff roster. He had a playoff roster, and he poorly constructed it. Yes, we've executed, especially in that Saints game. Good God, was execution terrible. Every single player can point to themselves at certain points in certain games. They didn't execute. But if it was a really good defensive end there in his prime and not Chandler Jones, we probably win that Arizona game. If, you know, we don't sign Darren Waller all that money and we get a defensive player or someone who doesn't drop passes in the Nashville Tennessee game, the Titans game, we probably win that Titans game. So, like, you're right. Like, bad execution, but the only thing Ziegler can control is who's out there. And he's done a terrible job. And this was damage control, his statement this morning. That's all I'm saying.
I think it's part of that too, but you can't discount, you know, the execution. I understand that.
I definitely don't.
You know,
I'm saying that's normally what we go about, right? When we're on this show, 70% of it is player A did shit. Player B did well. This is what player C has to do better, right? That's the bulk of our conversation. We talk about the Raiders. Ziegler does a presser. It's like, okay, let's talk Ziegler. Let's talk personnel. Let's talk roster and moves and trades for a little bit. Because it hasn't been pretty.
Well, what he said was nothing that came up that made sense. Because, look, again, he's not a head coach. He's not John Gruden as GM. He's not win now, do everything for now and worry about the rest of it later, which is why we get into positions like we're in now. Like, he left us in Oakland after he left. We were in a bad spot, owing a lot of money to players who were on the, like, Chandler Jones-esque. And we had a ton of those. We didn't just have one or two. We had a lot, okay? Mm-hmm. And then when he did the same thing in Tampa, okay, he's looking at it as a GM. We have to fix these major gaping holes. Yeah, he liked that. Major gaping holes in our roster.
Make them tight.
And if it makes sense, we can make a deal. But if it doesn't make sense, if it's a little too rich, then we can't make that deal.
Yeah, and I'm treating Ziegler the same way I treat McDaniels. They've given us shit so far, but I'm in it for the long haul. I'm like, all right, it's you know, it takes time, blah, blah, blah. To your Gruden point, like, yeah, Gruden left some shit over, but Ziegler's making his own shit too. You know what Chandler Jones' cap hit is next season? Do you remember?
It's like 20-something million or something like that.
Over 19, almost 20. Yeah, well, 20. Almost 20 million, right? Yeah. That's 100% Ziegler, right?
Yeah, that's tough.
Swaller thing, all that guarantee. We had, if anything, Gruden gave Ziegler a gift with Waller's contract, right? He had two more years on that contract of pennies. And could only wait one more year. Ziegler said, nope, we're jumping in, making him rich right now. That's 100% Ziegler.
We also don't know what happened with the Waller thing behind the scenes. He can say all he wants, I want to play, but he wasn't out there, number one. And do you alienate a captain on your team, your very first thing in? You know, that's tough.
So do you like the Waller move or no? Because you said before you hated it.
I don't like it, but there's certain things you have to do sometimes.
But you're giving Ziegler the benefit of the doubt that maybe something.
No, I'm saying that we don't know, and it's a possibility. So I wouldn't come down on him 100%, because I mean, honestly, if you look at it, are you going to alienate one of the captains on your team, and it's your first season there? Like, what kind of message is that sending? Like, you do want to keep this guy. He's one of the best in the league at his position. You didn't know he was going to get hurt, right? And you know, look at Keenan Allen. He has a hamstring injury too. He's been out longer than Waller's been out. It's not like he's, you know, babying it or milking it or anything like that. I mean, sometimes these hamstring injuries, when you're the type of player like they are, you know.
I wish you give Carr the same benefit of the doubt that you give Ziegler.
After 9 years, I'll come down on him the same way I do Derek Carr.
Okay. Well, we can all agree Ziegler has not, like, it's not at the point. Same thing with McDaniels. Ziegler's not on a hot seat. We're not thinking about firing him. Like, none of that. Moving forward, it's like I'm trying to be optimistic. Looking back, it's been terrible. It's been very, very bad. Other than Devontae, the big moves have been bad. And even the Jonathan Hankins thing, like a sixth for a seventh for our best run-stopping defensive tackle, it's like he played great for the Cowboys over the weekend, right? So it's like it's just not – hopefully it pans out. Hopefully, like, it's just time and he's got a vision and this is all part of it and it's growing pains. But that's best case scenario, because so far it's been bad.
Like what you give to Derek Carr all the time. You give him best case scenario do the same thing for
that's
the
what
entire
I'm doing.
Team.
That's literally no, what you're not. You're like, well,
hopefully,
been trash and hoping.
You don't say hopefully Derek Carr could be one of the top quarterbacks in the league. You say he is one of the top quarterbacks in the league.
Derek Carr's track record as an NFL quarterback is light years better than Josh McDaniel's track record as a head coach. We're banking that he has become a better one. Two very different things.
I mean, Derek Carr's record in the NFL is not good.
The Raiders' record with the worst defense of the decade is not
good. I mean, you can slice it any way you want, but if you want to talk track records, he's what, 59-75? 44% win rate.
Better than McDaniels. And McDaniels inherited a better and didn't have the worst defense of the decade.
Well, let's see. The first 35 games of their career. First 35 games, Josh McDaniels is 13-22. That's 37% win percentage. Derek Carr was 12-23. 34%.
Okay, come on. You remember those first years when we weren't going to have 1,000 yards?
Bro,
we weren't on
pace. You remember these first years? This is his first year here, man. If you want to do it to one person, do it to the other.
I don't cut up data to make a point.
Cutting it up. I'm giving you the whole data.
What's your win percentage? Period.
44% over a 9-year career. Let's see Josh McDaniels after 9 years of coaching. Let's see where his win percentage is.
If he was here 9 years, I would love it because that means he's doing well. God, I hope that's the case.
All we can go by is what the numbers they have, which is 35 games.
Speaking of Josh McDaniels, Josh McDaniels is 2-7. Just 7 games, he's had to meet with Mark Davis after the Titans game. And
go to the principal's office.
Mark Davis has felt the need to issue a statement through one of the guys that he goes to issue statements, Vincent Bocciagnori.
He has a guy for that.
He's got a guy for that, and it's Vince. And Mark Davis said, "All right, from Vince, just to clear anything up after some report surfaced today, this is from Raiders owner Mark Davis. Josh McDaniels is our head coach and will be for years to come. When you have to not once but twice, as a billionaire owner, pop your head up and let everyone know the status of your head coach, something's awry. Now, this is a strong statement, and I guess it's a good statement that he's publicly backing his head coach. Well, remember when Joe Rogan got in that N-word problem and like they tried to cancel him and he missed a pay-per-view and he did that video and he said, you know, I'm not racist. I was taking on content, blah, blah, blah. And he ended it with something very poignant. He said, I'm not racist, but if you have to come out and tell people you aren't, you fucked up, right? If you have to have your owner come out publicly and say the head coach is our guy, you fucked up, right? Like that. Things aren't going well, right? If we were 7-0, Mark Davis would be like, nope, don't worry, Josh McDaniels is our guy, right? Like that wouldn't be a thing.
Yeah, for sure.
So I'm wondering, would Mark, not what would you do, not what would I do, but would the owner of the fantastic franchise, the Silver and Black, Las Vegas Raiders, that owner, Mark Davis, do you think he would fire Josh McDaniels after 1 year? Is it possible that it could be a one and done after this 2-5 start?
I don't think so. I don't think so at all. Look, there was rumors swirling around Gruden for a couple of years, his first couple of years, because we're like, dude, this team sucks. They're drafting and all this other shit, right? Mm-hmm. Mark Davis never came out and fucking backed him. There were freaking rumors for years they're going to trade.
Hey, he did. No, he came out and backed Gruden publicly. Yeah. I remember.
Not like this. I don't know, man.
It was exactly like this. Look, like a media member.
And just like the Joe Rogan thing.
Not 7 games in year one.
Just like the Joe Rogan thing when he came out and said, I'm not racist. Mm-hmm. I mean, I believe him at his word that he isn't. I believe Mark Davis at his word that he wants Josh McDaniels to be the head coach of this team for years to come. Now, is there certain things that can change that? Sure there is. If he pulls a Gruden and does some stupid shit, if his team just revolts on him and he just like he can't handle it, if he implodes, which I don't see happening, but there's certain things that can happen to make him change his mind. But also, you have to take a look at this. You can't be bouncing around from coach to coach to coach, man. it's not a good look, and you're not going to get the highest quality coaches to come in because it's they're not going to want to be bounced after a year because you bounced the last two guys after. You know what I'm saying? So it's like you do have to have some foresight and some long-term planning as well, and you do have to be patient. And I think that when Mark Davis signed up for that Ziegler McDaniels package, it was a long-term thing. It wasn't
I think every head coach, not every owner every time. Like, you know, sometimes you know you have a bridge coach, right? When you've got your eye, like, you know, like Dallas is just waiting for Sean Payton to come back, right? Like there's certain situations like that, but usually
I think Sean Payton might go to freaking Chargers, bro. I'm telling you right now.
But like that's my point. Is like little tiny God, that would suck. I hope Brandon
would suck
in with the Chargers.
Brandon Staley has already buried himself, dude.
He had so much media equity. Like he had so much media equity, and he just, dude, the head coaching in the AFC West.
Nice hair.
Like Andy Reid, and then everyone else.
Everyone also ran. It's like he got Staley had that nice hair, that big smile. Hey man, I'm a young guy and I'm hip.
Nathaniel Hackett had to hire a babysitter after like week three.
I told you from the very beginning that guy was trash.
Dude,
I told you from the very beginning,
everyone they hired him to try to get Aaron Rodgers. When they get it, there's like, oh shit.
When he was oogling fucking Wilson's Ruffles wife, bro. I'm like, come on, man, this guy's not gonna fucking
pan out. Let's say the Raiders go 4-13. Daniel's still the coach next season? You think Mark Davis?
I think so.
An implosion that bad?
The only thing that I see happening is if like all the players just kind of like just shut them out, and it's just
like what happened in
toxic,
Denver.
Yeah, like a toxic environment there, and like what happened with the Nets, right? Like with the Brooklyn Nets, like everyone just started shutting out the coach. They just didn't listen to him. They're if they start getting blown out every single game, okay, that's different. But I don't. First off, I don't see this team ending that poorly. I think that
it would be unbelievable if arguably the best locker room in football, like last season, like they overcame more than any team has ever had to, right? Like such a durable locker room. If McDaniels manages to lose that locker room in one season, right? Like it would take, I'm with you. I think a bad record, I think Mark Davis is going to look at like, look, well, one, just purely financially, we don't know what his deal is, but there's always, we know it's a pretty decent.
You're still paying Gruden, right?
Time-wise. And a buyout after year one, it's got to be so expensive. Like it's got to be. Now, Mark Davis isn't poor anymore now that he can fill Allegiant Stadium up with the most expensive ticket in football, but like that's a big, like the money he'd have to pay Josh McDaniels. We don't know what that number is, but it has to be sustainable. If his contract looks anything like a coaching contract in any form of football, it's eight figures.
It's thick. It's a thick buyout.
It's girthy, right? It's a girthy buyout. So that's one big part of it.
Also, like the message you're sending to other coaches coming in, like, hey, you don't get any leeway. If you don't win right now, you don't get a second year, and like that's not a good precedent to set.
But do you want to blow out the message you send your fans too? Like, this guy took over a 10-win playoff team, wins four games, and we're still going to keep him? Like,
I want to address that right now because you keep saying a playoff team, like every single playoff team gets better the next year. The way it's set up, a little less than half the teams in the NFL make the playoffs, right? A little less than half. Okay. So that means
14 of 32.
Yeah, a little less than half. And there's always major turnaround, right? Major turnaround there's a couple of the teams that you know are going to make the playoffs, maybe like three or four. There's usually like three spots, four spots up for grabs, a new division winner and a couple of, you know, wild cards, right? That's usually what you see. So this thing, you took over a playoff team. Like, well, you know what? You have to take a look at the roster and what was actually there. And the fact that we won four overtime games last year. And I understand, they're resilient, this and that, but there's players on the other team too. But
my point is, and you agreed with me last season when we talked about this, is like normally when you come in with a whole new GM, whole new coaching staff, you're taking over a 3-win team, right? You're taking over a team that's been terrible. This is one of the best teams in recent memory that got a new coaching staff. Now, maybe they got, right to your point, they got lucky, or maybe they overplayed themselves. Like that could all be true, But this is still a much better team than new head coaches normally take over, right? We can agree on that.
I agree. I can agree on that. But also you have to agree that we're not getting blown out except for one game.
And if I'm Josh McDaniels, that's my case. Is like, hey, Mark or Mr. Davis or bro or whatever he calls him, right? Bro, we're this close. God. We're one good linebacker away from winning this. We're one right tackle away from being 5-2, or right. Like that would be my pitch if I'm Josh McDaniels. Is like,
I think Mark Davis knows that, man.
And the point differential is not that bad. Even after getting blown out, dude. Like -16, something like that.
That's what I'm saying. It's like we were +8 before we getting blown out. Mm-hmm. So it wasn't like, you know, we were in every game, you know, so I can understand, like, look, and usually when a head coach loses a locker room, it's like week 14 mm-hmm. or week 15, right? Because, again, these players, they don't want to put bad tape out there. And if they're getting blown out every single week, that means they're putting bad tape out there. And then it's like, dude, let's just put it all on the coach because we've already been putting bad tape out there. It's not going to happen soon if now, it does.
Now, if anyone can make something turn south immediately, it's Josh McDaniels. He was fired in Denver after 28 games. And remember, that was after starting 6-0. Like everyone's like, this is the best hire ever. This is, everything's great, right? Like he was able to lose that locker room and have things fall apart in 22 games, right? Like six game win streak. And like fucking, you should be flying, right? It was like, oh, this is like, He could be the meanest, angriest motherfucker on planet Earth. But if you're 6-0, you're like,
winning, it's okay.
Who cares? Like, we're winning, right? So that's my point, is like, I'm so baffled by Josh McDaniels. He has every single trait of a great head coach. Offensive mind, born and raised football. Like you never hear Patriots players bash him ever. Like Tom Brady, like, adored him. He's got every single trait of a good head coach. Except the record.
the thing that you hear the most out of players when they talk about Josh McDaniels is prepared. Mm. He's prepared. He has an answer for everything, and he's right. He has an answer for everything. So how do you lose a locker room quickly? Is you do what you're saying that Ziegler should have done and blame the players as far as, oh, yeah, they're just not any good.
No.
That's how
he said exactly what he's supposed to. My point is, it's our job to see through it as damage control. There's the difference.
It doesn't mean that what he's saying is false, because it's also true, like you said.
Yeah.
So the way that you can keep players involved and invested is by showing him the mistakes that are being made and how easily they're fixed. Ultimately, I can show you all I want how to do something, but you have to go out and execute. Like, for example, it's fucking nuts. I have 7 fucking fighters fighting on the same goddamn card. That's crazy. I don't know if you guys can appreciate how much work that is on that night. RJ knows.
It's like Jackson Winklejohn in their prime at a UFC.
It's freaking crazy, dude, having all those people fighting one card. Anyway, I'm running strength and conditioning, right? And I'm doing this exercise with the Bulgarian bags, the big heavy Bulgarian bags. You know what they are, right? So I'm showing them how to do this exercise with the footwork and everything. And I'm actually doing it. And I'm actually showing them, here's what you do. Boom. This way, this way, this way. And they're doing it all fucked up and they're hitting their knees and they're like, oh, it's flying on their head and all this shit. I can show them all I want how to do something. They have to go out and do it. And sometimes, like with them, like with the fighters, it just took a couple of reps for them to get it right. And then it's still not perfect with some of them. With some of them, they picked it up right away. But it takes time for you showing them what they're doing wrong, especially when they haven't been taught that way before.
Well, and again, isn't that what separates the best head coaches from others is
the teaching,
closing that gap, making it relatable. Like, do you remember the video of, it's kind of adorable when John Gruden was like trying to get Carr to be better in the pocket. Like, hey, this is when you run. I want you to run here. I want you to wiggle here. And he's fucking his fat ass, like 55 year old, is like chasing him. He's like, go run. He's like holding on to his glasses. And he's like, yes, going glasses. After him. I was like, that's good coaching. That's like, here's the urgency. Here's me being a part of it. He can just say, hey, when you see this, run that way. But no, Gruden's out there, glasses flying everywhere, clipboard in hand, getting in his face, being a part of it. One, he loves football. I'm sure he enjoyed every second of it, but I think that's infectious. And that's, I think you know, that helped Carr be so much better in the pocket than he'd been prior, right? Things like that. I think if I could point to anything, I've never been Josh McDaniels' locker room, but if I could guess, I think that's what he's missing. I think he's missing the get in there with them, make them, you know, teach that, not teach them the why, show and be a part of the why. Like Gruden was like, imagine I'm Chandler Jones,
be involved,
right? Yeah. Like that's the only thing I can think of. Cause like I said, like we do this Josh McDaniels versus Derek Carr thing, you and me all the time. And I hate it. Cause I think Josh McDaniels has, again, every single trait of a good head coach on paper. It's like, he's got it. Resume, background,
knowledge,
everything. Just, experience. But he just loses. He just can't win as a head coach. And it's something intangible. That's all I can think is it's something intangible, whatever that is, but it's something important. It's something that's, we can't brush off. He's like, well, he's got it all. He'll figure it out. Like, I hope so. And he said all the right things, right, leading up to this. That's why I'm still optimistic for the future. But it's like that tangible thing is not a small deal.
And the players did too, man. What was Carr and Adam saying? Hey, he sat down. He talked to me about the system. What do you like?
Loved hearing that.
It's like, yeah. Okay, well, where is it?
Players are buying where in. It sounds it? Like it's players like, are buying in.
Yeah, man. Hey, look, he hasn't lost this locker room from what I'm hearing. These players are upset. They're not checked out. It's a big difference, and you can tell. So that bodes well, I think, for Josh McDaniels when a group that is looked at to be this talented has having this bad of a stretch can still be invested and not checked out and still be even, you know, blaming themselves. What did Devontae say? We have to go out and make the play.
Which is why I thought this was the best locker room for Josh McDaniels, a locker room that keeps
it
themselves.
Still can be.
They keep themselves in check. They keep themselves accountable. They clearly handle some of the worst adversity a team can. Like I thought, okay, like even if Josh McDaniels hasn't overcome those issues that made him fail in Denver, the culture of this locker room seems like something that's not as big of an issue because they can kind of do it themselves.
Yeah. Look,
it's something.
Look, I'm going to talk crazy right now. Is it okay?
Get wild. Talk
crazy. Okay.
You we're love small butts.
We're doing. Oh hell no! No.
You have 18 strokes. And I don't think
I'll take
that.
A big ass and small titties any day of the week. But no, not a small butt. I need to have something to grip onto. But we've won 4 games in a row. We know we can do it. If we go 4, then lose one, then 4, then lose one. Guess where we are? 10-7. Mm-hmm. So all is not lost. I think the players know that too, because I think the players know that we can go in to Kansas City and play with the best teams. We just need to execute when the time is right. And I think Josh McDaniels, again, what do you feel about the 2-point conversion? Let's just jump on. This is part of my crazy talk. What do you think of the 2-point conversion in Kansas City?
I liked the aggression, hated the actual play call.
Yeah, me too. I didn't like the play call either.
Same with the fake punt. Same with the 3-and-1 with Devontae.
I didn't like the 3rd-and-1 reverse, the jet sweep. I didn't like that whatsoever. Ultimately, Colton Miller's got to make that block, dude. If Colton Miller just stands in front of the guy, he gets the first down. So you can shit on the play call all you want. The play was there to be made. It was just a very shitty. Even the fake punt was a good play call because we had a hat on that side of the ball. I don't know if you saw the game film. There was like 4 players on that side and 4 blockers. It was 1-on-1. It's just, you know, the Brandon Bolden didn't have a good block. He went inside instead of hooking him outside, and that messed up Horsted, and that just bogged everything down. And look, it's about the execution. You can talk about the play call all you want, but the play call was there because there was a hat on a hat. And I think that's a cue where when you look at our side and you have 4 guys on this side of the line of scrimmage and you have 4 blockers on that side, that's when you run it. And just the execution wasn't there. I like the aggression of the 2-point conversion.
Real quick, I mean, to get 100% blocking rate on 4 blocks is hard in the NFL. Right. Like you're right. Like 4-on-4, you know, it could work, but like to get 100% block rate on 4 blocks, like that's
okay. Two of those blocks were a little bit further down the field. They weren't on the line of scrimmage. Mm-hmm. And you would have gotten that yardage with that one block, because that one bad block knocked out two players, and then everything else was, went to shit. So I get what you're saying. The thing is you have these certain keys set up for a reason, and you're in the field, part of the field where that would be acceptable to do, I guess, if you want to call it like the book on it or whatever. When you look at the tape, do you agree with the call? I mean, if it would have worked, would you have disagreed with it? Like, no, he's like, hey, you know what? It was a hat on a hat, and they executed it, and they got the first down. It's, you know, it's, I'm not trying to make this a personal versus execution thing, but we have to execute better on these things. And for it to be a Josh McDaniels guy that didn't execute there, I mean, it's
Dave Ziegler
it's,
guy.
It's tough. Right? A Dave like Ziegler it's, guy. Yeah. It's Brandon
again,
Bolden.
That's another like block dude you brought in. And it's,
yeah. And he made a shitty block and it blew up the whole play. So here's where the crazy talk is involved. The 2-point conversion was a building point. Let's execute this 2-point conversion. Let's win this fucking game and make this fucking happen. I have the confidence in you guys to be able to execute this play that we've ran a million times during goal line in practice. We can execute this play, and it wasn't executed properly. Now, even after that, we got a stop miraculously, and we got the ball back, and I still fucked up. But the deal being is I don't see that as being a bad thing or a bad call. It's an opportunity for you to build on your execution.
Raiders and what up, Winbags?
Wait for you to drink. You know it.
Uncharted Raider. You guys can literally agree with each other and still argue about it. I feel like that's our gift, or is it our curse?
I think it's a gift.
Remember the old the Family Guy scene when Stewie's like, oh yeah, I can't wait till I'm married and old for a long time. And it's him old with the wife, and they're both sitting there, and the wife sneezes, and Stewie looks at him and goes, like, they just hate it. Like, they're just on edge. You know what I mean? Just mean bugs her because she sneezes. I feel like that's like us. Like, we're just waiting to, like, we're so defensive, we're waiting to, like, pounce at any moment. And we're like, oh wait, you're agreeing with me? Sorry. I was like my daughter, she's 3. Her first instinct is to say no to anything because she's a sassy 3-year-old. She's a 3-nager. It's like, no.
And where she got that from?
Definitely the mom. And just like, hey, do you want to brush your teeth? No. Ready for bed? No. Do you want ice cream? Yes.
Yes, that is correct.
Do you mean yes? Yes. It's kind of like that, I think.
Yeah, I think a lot of times when we come to the same conclusion, but we take a different path, It's still an argument because of the path we took to get there.
We get caught up in the how.
Yeah.
Reality check. The players don't like McDaniels. They don't want to work for him or his staff. I don't buy that.
I don't buy that whatsoever. I don't get a sense of the players being checked out at all.
I mean, they might be, but I'm not getting that vibe.
Nah, dude. Any of them. This is the modern NFL, bro. These guys are not going to stay quiet about this shit. You would have heard something.
This is what's so weird. Like, we heard all these stories of how the ex-Bronco players, like, couldn't stand him. You don't hear that from anyone else. None of the Patriots players, not even his year in with the Rams, no one from the Raiders this year. It's like, it's weird. Like, it was like, you hear all those examples from the Broncos, nowhere else. So I'm hoping that it was just like a bad mixture of personalities in Denver. Like, maybe that's why he imploded.
Yeah, I mean,
they turned on him. Like, just, and also remember the whole, like, was he was going to trade Cutler, but like he had said he wanted to, but then couldn't. Remember that? Like, it started off on such a bad foot.
Yeah, it didn't start great.
And yet they still went 6-0. So it was like, yeah. I wonder if like that poison kind of like, it was everyone in the back of everyone's mind, but it took a while to fester, type of thing.
Well, I watched a podcast. Brandon Marshall was on it, the wide receiver, mm-hmm. And after like 3 games, he said, "Oh, after 3 losses, excuse me." So they were 6-3. They're like, "Oh man, I knew we weren't that good." It was after the 3rd loss, so they were still 6-3, mm-hmm. And then the team quit. So how much of that was the previous regime because they were losers for however many long years they were losers before McDaniels got there? look, the way the media world works now, if there's an issue in the locker room, we would have heard about it. No locker room is that airtight where you don't hear shit. We even heard shit from the Steelers locker room. And that is the tightest ship run, even tighter than the Patriots. Those guys are iron freaking dude. Mike Tomlin runs that ship where you don't say shit. Well, guess what? It's the modern NFL, and Chase Claypool is going to say some shit. So if something was going on in the locker room, we would have heard it.
One of the greatest, like, coaching moves ever is how Tomlin was able to why am I fucking blanking on his name? The Steelers wide receiver that we got that practiced, like, twice and disappeared. Why am I blanking on his name?
Bryant? Antonio Brown?
Antonio Brown. Can't believe I blanked on Antonio
Brown. We got two. We got two from
him. We got two of them, right? Yeah. I blanked on Antonio Brown. It's a minor miracle that it never really got out just how crazy Antonio Brown was when he was in Pittsburgh.
Dude, this guy's jerking off in a fucking public pool with his dick on hard. Like, dude, this guy's nuts.
And the rest of the NFL is like, well, you know, he's a little, you know, he's kind of a bright personality, but, you know, we can take him. It's like, no, he's fucking insane.
He's insane.
And Tomlin kept that under wraps for years, how insane he was. That's a minor miracle.
He's the CEO of Dundas Sports.
Nate U08. Raiders media sucks for anyone over the age of 12. Well, that sucks for us because ours is aimed at people 11 and under. So we're missing that 12-year-old demographic.
Yeah. Good for children.
Yeah. Very good for children.
You know what? I disagree with that. I think that the Raiders media, especially their social media, is very aged. Because they don't do a lot of things that 12-year-olds like on social media, mm-hmm. You know? I don't know any 12-year-olds that are following the Raiders on their social media.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's directly from the Raiders. But I think he's thinking more like media, like, you know, the beat writers and that kind of shit. The Raiders media is unique because it's a team in a new city, things change a lot. So, like, if you go to, like, the Philly market, the Boston market, the New York market, they're, like...
Boston market.
Their media embodies their fan base, right? So, like, if you're on a losing streak, like, the media is going to go after that head coach because that's what their fan base wants, right? Mm-hmm. Because Vegas, it's, like, a whole new... Like, look at the Vegas media, like, the beat writers. Like, they're either from the Bay Area and moved to Vegas and they're new, or they're Vegas-based people who have... They don't care about the Raiders. They have no attachment to the Raiders. Like, it's a job, right? And that's kind of how it should be, right? Like, if you're a real true, like, journalistic beat writer, which that's not us, we're fans. But if you're a real true mm-hmm. journalistic beat writer, you should be objective with the team and not, like, really be a fan. But it's even more so because it's a market that's not used to having an NFL team. That's still kind of getting on board. And it's a bunch of either import media guys that aren't from the area or guys that are from the area and have no attachment to the Raiders. So you get like there's an indifference with Raiders media, which isn't not a bad thing by any means. It's actually, I would argue it's more good than bad, but the media doesn't emulate us.
Raiders, you wouldn't want it to either because it's too polarizing. You want the information. And you want analysis. You don't want a lot of opinion when it comes from the media like that because you want to draw your own opinion from the data that you're given, from what your eyeballs see, from the data. You want to draw your own opinion. When someone's constantly giving you their opinion and you're supposed to be this objective media, that's when you start losing people. That's why people hate me.
Well, they hate you because...
There's a lot of reasons they can hate me. I'll say that right now. I give them a lot of reasons.
So we went long. We didn't even get a chance to break down Raiders Jags. So we'll do that
later.
Which is sometimes better because then we get a better gauge on, you know, injury status, stuff like that. So sorry for people that just listen to the pod. You're going to have to check out the YouTube for Raiders Jags. Raiders -1.5 favorites still. I think it's because the Jags were the only team that played almost as bad as the Raiders last Sunday. Like, the Jags played. Trevor Lawrence was maybe the only quarterback last week that played worse than Derek Carr. And even then, it's really close. It's really close.
Yeah, he was really bad. He's had a couple of bad games in a row.
So we'll see. All right, but until then, knock on wood if you're with me.